How do you do, and welcome to The Lively Art of Conversation. I'm Irv Kupcinet, your host. This is the show that's unrehearsed and the conversation is uninhibited. And among the guests you'll meet today, Roy Wilkins of the NAACP. He's the senior statesman of the civil rights movement. Ben Holman, representing the Department of Justice in Washington. Kais Beach of the Chicago Daily News, one of America's best-known foreign correspondents. He's been covering Asia for 22 years. Mike Masaoka, World War II hero and a distinguished Japanese-American citizen. Also, you'll meet Laploy Ashford. He's the director of the Chicago Urban League. We'll join our lively ones right after this message.
Air pollution, thanks to a burning dump. This is the cheap and easy way to dispose of a city's solid wastes. It reduces the volume of garbage and trash, but generates gases, smoke, and particulate matter. Breathe this stuff long enough, and you may be running the hazard of emphysema, chronic bronchitis, or even lung cancer. Really, air pollution is bad. Which makes you wonder why people indulge in personal air pollution.
If you think staying in school is tough, listen to someone who quit.
Wow, does that take me back? Oh, at first being out of school is a lot of kicks. But just try to get work. You can have all the penny-ante jobs you want. But a good job with a future, forget it. It's just like they say. To get a good job, you need a good education. So after a year of sorry, bud, you don't have the training. I went back and got some training. Sure, it was tough. But it was worth it. I mean, it pays off better than pitching pennies.
If you're in school, stay there. If you're out of school, get help from the youth counselor at your state employment service or youth opportunity center.
We've been joined by two more distinguished guests. First, this is Mike Masaoka. He's one of the outstanding Japanese Americans being honored this weekend by the Japanese American Citizens League. Mike is a World War II hero and has quite a story to tell us. And this is Marvin Kittman, one of the great put-on artists of our day. He's a TV critic and the author of two new books. He's got two. You've only got one. One is You Can't Judge a Book by Its Cover, and the other is George Washington's Expense Account. How can a man who never told a lie have an expense account?
Well, that's what the my whole book is about. Do you want me to tell you about
we'll
that?
Get back to that. Before, a few moments ago, we were talking about the racial discrimination that exists around the world. And Dr. Wilkins, you were saying something about the Japanese and the Chinese in their regard of other race,
The Japanese, of course, have a solution that minorities in this country would do well to emulate, and that is that the Japanese children in school are almost universally among the top of the class. Their parents don't even worry about it. They're there. They're just the best there is. They study, and then instead of spending their time throwing bricks, like the Negro kids do, they study the books. Now, I don't know how long that'll last. It's
already sort of breaking down.
It's catching.
Catching up to the Americans.
The Chinese believe that they have the superior race. That's my impression. Now, I have to hedge like Ben Holman did there. I have to say that's my impression. But I searched diligently the records of the NAACP for the last 60 years, and I find very few, if any, Chinese members or donors in any amount. I'm speaking of $5 on up. I'm not speaking of $100,000 on up. They simply don't go for that. Now, they tend to their business. The Japanese, on the other hand, are much more adaptable, and after 1942, they They took note of the American race problem, and they had some views on it. Now, they don't go around carrying Viet Cong flags or anything like that in order to prove their patriotism, but they're much warmer than they have been.
I think the Japanese-American Citizens League has a wonderful slogan, Mike. Is it a greater American for better Americans?
Better Americans for a greater America.
Yeah, better Americans and a greater America.
That's his slogan. He coined it.
Well, while we're passing compliments, may I say that the NAACP was the first national organization back in 1942 that challenged the necessity for evacuating Japanese Americans. And Roy Wilkins wrote the first national editorial against a very bad mistreatment of an American
That's
minority.
A sad chapter in our history that we have to be reminded of every now and then. Of course, you were a victim of that, were you not, Mike?
Yes, and that's why we, the Japanese American Citizens League, the JACL, is so identified with the NAACP and other groups in the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights. And that's why we're particularly concerned with this preventive detention procedure
Sure.
that's recommended by the Attorney General. We know what it is to be in protective custody, preventive detention, or whatnot. First of all, we were put in because they were afraid that we would sabotage America. Later on, when they found out that there was no instance of espionage or sabotage, they said we were put into these camps to prevent the other people from mutilating or violating us because of our ancestry. We know what it is to be in preventive detention, and we don't want to see anyone else in that same kind of boat.
Mike, weren't you one of those who sold President Roosevelt on organizing the Japanese American citizens into a war unit in World War II?
Yes. What happened is after the Japanese enemy attacked Pearl Harbor, the Army decided that they were a little afraid of our loyalty. And after we got moved into camp by the same Army, we wanted to go out and fight because we thought, at least at that time, that this was the best way to prove our loyalty. And, well, I lost a brother in the thing. We had five brothers at one time. And I guess, out of all the groups that served in World War II, ours may be the only one that didn't die in vain. Because out of that war came citizenship for our parents, came immigration rights for the Japanese people, came for us an awareness of the citizenship problems of others. I think we're a little more humane, a little better American because of our wartime experience, although it was a pretty tragic one.
Mike, didn't Uncle Sam pay back a tremendous amount of money that it was a tremendous amount, but probably didn't cover the whole thing for the amount of property taken away from the Japanese Americans at that time?
Depends on what you mean by a tremendous amount of money. We were paid back less than 10 cents on a dollar in 1965 on 1941 losses. That's not very good.
What did the sum come to, though? It was a large sum, as I recall.
$37 million was all when in 1941, or rather 1942, the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco said that we had lost $400 million at 1941 rates. So the compensation program is very partial, very skimpy. And while it's a little faster than being given to the Indians, it certainly was a slow process.
Very, very slow. And in fact, it was one of the things that attracted me to the whole Japanese-American position, was the way in which they were cheated under that hysteria of Tule Lake Camp and so forth. I know people on the West Coast who bought Japanese Americans' automobiles at 25 cents on the dollar. They bought their homes for 25, 50 cents on the dollar because they had to go Monday morning.
That's right.
They had to go Monday morning, and that's all there was to it, and you had to get rid of it Saturday night. That's all.
Yeah, we talked about
it. It was a block busting on a large
scale. It was terrible.
You know, we talk about Hitler and his racism. Hitler insisted only that Jews with 1/6 or 1/8 Jewish blood go to camp. Our American government insisted that if we had as much as 1/16 Japanese blood, you had to go to camp.
You know, we've talked about preventive detention, and certainly it's a very horrifying thought for most of us. But I think that the viewers, and I'm listening with a great deal of interest, the gentleman on my right, and I can't remember the name.
Mike Masaoka, remember that name.
Masaoka.
Good Irish
okay.
name.
Right. But I think that I would appreciate if we could take a moment to hear, you know, we're hearing about some of the things that happen. What is it really in depth, if we could get to it, some of the things that have occurred, just general descriptions of things that occurred in this detention process, which you feel are very applicable and very threatening to the whole system of America as it now stands today. I've heard talk about property losses and whatever, and these things seem incredible to me. I wasn't that old enough to realize it, but
it's
I think
it's a chapter
more
that we don't talk
know.
About much in the United States, but it's one of the worst and bleakest chapters in our history, the way we treated the Japanese Americans.
But isn't that the way we're going with these preventive detention measures? And
excuse me for interrupting, but when you study American history, especially during the Revolutionary period, you find that what we did to the Japanese is actually a great American tradition. Because the same thing was done during the Revolutionary War to the Tories in the United States, the people that were supporting King George. All their property they had to sell also at 5 cents and a dollar, and it's really something that's been going on.
No, there's a great difference. First of all, in the case of the Tories and the Revolutionary, this was not racist. They weren't put into camps. They weren't given 48 hours to leave.
No, I'm just talking about the property aspects of it. And, of course, that was one of the basic principles that the country was founded on, the protection of property.
I'd like to bring this up to today because I know Kai's Beach has to leave shortly. But there is a big difference in the United States today with Japan over the import problem today, which has become a major factor. I wonder, Kai, from your point of view over there, how the what the reaction is on this squabble.
Well, I'm glad you asked me about that because I happened to have been in Tokyo a few days ago and I went into this business and what people on both sides, Americans and Japanese, are afraid of is a trade war between the two countries.
Yeah.
And this is going can be disastrous for both sides. As people may or may not know, Japan is our biggest customer
overseas customer.
Canada, next to Canada, which is hardly overseas. And in turn, Japan sells more to us than it does to any other country. So it's the biggest trading volume in the history of mankind. And the principal item in dispute was textiles.
Yes.
Now, there are many Americans, trade officials I talked to on this subject, who said that we didn't have a very good case in textiles. That we couldn't really prove a case. That the textile industry wasn't being hurt that much. But textiles is only a symbolic or symptomatic of a deeper malaise, as it were. And there's a bill in Congress, in the House, which has been introduced by Representative Mills, which will limit Japanese textile exports to the United States. This came about after the Japanese flatly refused to impose voluntary quotas. Now, next in line is the shoe industry, steel, strawberry growers, mink growers, now you name it.
And the other side, Japan will instill some of these same measures against us.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, Japan they may have a good case in textiles, but they haven't a leg to stand on with their own trade barriers. It's simply they're going to have to give, or there's going to be hell to pay. The Japanese exclude American automobiles, even though they sell a great many automobiles in the United States. They treat the United States like an underdeveloped nation in this sense, that all your imports, that the bulk of your imports from the United States to Japan are raw materials, which are processed and resold in the form of transistors and radios, TV sets, and whatever, back to the United States.
Do they let in our breakable toys there?
They recently liberalized mother of pearl buttons, I think.
Just a
also cable cars.
For our message, and we'll be right back.
It's something.
This is America, vast, rich, wondrous. The American Indian gave us our basic legacy. The late President John F. Kennedy once said, "When we forget great contributors to our American history, when we neglect the heroic past of the American Indian, we weaken our own heritage." Teachers, warriors, humanitarians, such as Sequoia, Sitting Bull, and Chief Joseph, all contributed to strengthening America. These first Americans are people of great vitality, wisdom, and culture. The Indians have contributed dynamically to American history. They are part of our shared and remembered heritage. For a free booklet, write to American Indian, Box 6558, Washington, D.C., 20009.
That's it. I'm Tom Seaver. A pitcher needs a variety of pitches to get the big hitters in a tight situation. I always bear down harder to get the batter out. Life should be played the same way. Bear down when the going gets tougher, and remember that the more pitches you have, the better equipped you'll be to face the hitters. In order to win, the best players follow the rules. A ball player who doesn't always loses. We have great responsibilities as citizens in helping our nation grow, and there are rules to help guide us toward this. The Federal Bar Association's Law Observance Program asks for your help in stopping crime. Obey the law and cooperate with the police.